The Region 8 Equity Assistance Center at Metropolitan State University of Denver is guided by its mission to provide, upon request,
technical assistance, training, and staff development for school boards, school districts,
tribal education agencies, charter schools, and other responsible governmental agencies.
We strive to promote equitable education opportunities and access for all students.
We seek to improve equity, access, and participation in high-quality, research-based opportunities for education for all students.
We work to reduce disparities between and among groups where they may arise.
Hello, and welcome to Equity Today, the Region 8 Equity Assistance Center podcast. I am Tyler, and today we are sitting here with the whole EAC group, and you guys were recently at a whole nationwide EAC conference, I understand.
Well, this is Kathy Rigsby, and yes, we were. It's something that we do once every grant cycle, and it's a real help to everybody in the 10 Equity Assistance Centers. Most of the directors know one of each other and some of their own staffs, but that doesn't mean the staff members of each center knows either all the directors or even their counterparts in the 10 centers. So it's an opportunity to, one, get to know one another, but to also share what each of the centers is doing, because each center has its own personality and its own particular equity specialty. We have some centers that do more work in English language acquisition than others. Our center happens to be one that works in all three areas of race, gender, and national origin, but one that is stronger in the gender equity issues than its counterparts. So it's an opportunity to share. It's an opportunity to learn, particularly. It was the privilege to meet the heads of the various civil rights divisions within in the government, both justice as well as the Department of Education, Indian Education, and other areas that we'll talk about as we go through the agenda that we had. But it was a chance to meet and to catch up on what is the newest and latest in Washington. One of the things that I think was reassuring to those of us working in equity centers, because there will not be a significant change in the administration, many of the programs and work that we've started will be able to continue. And that doesn't always happen if there is a change in the White House. So in that sense, the work we started will continue. So with that, Tyler, let's see what else has the others got from our meeting.
Yeah.
And it was a busy meeting.
Very busy.
Spare time was hard to come by.
Yeah, we can kind of just run through the agenda or jump around it as you guys see relevant to our work that we do here, kind of talk about that.
Amber, why don't we start with you, because this was your first trip to Washington. As well as finally getting some faces with some names.
Yeah, it was great, really, to start putting some faces to the names of people that I hear throughout this office, since, you know, the rest of the staff has been working in equity assistance centers or working in equity for a considerably longer time than I have been. And so it's nice to kind of piece those together. I think one of the best things from the agenda happens to be the very first evening, which was just an open reception for everybody to kind of get to know each other, and it's a lot of, hi, I'm Amber Mose from Region 8. Where's Region 8? Where are you guys based? That sort of thing. And just trying to, you know, meet some of the other folks that have been doing equity work for a while, and also just trying to meet some of the people that are doing jobs similar to my own was nice. So it was very good.
Were there any particular insights that you gained from counterparts?
Well, the person that was closest to my job is Rana from Region 6. Is
she from Region 7?
From 7. And they are in Kansas, Manhattan, Kansas. And she's worked with Marcella before. Very nice woman. She's been doing this work for about 20 years. So just getting to speak with her about sort of her role at the center and trying to match it a little bit with mine. And, you know, that was just really nice to meet somebody that was kind of on that almost same wavelength as I am.
Nice.
So.
This is Janelle. It was also my first trip to D.C. for one of these meetings, and I thought it was interesting. We started out by talking about some of the trends and what's happening in education today with the Elementary and Secondary Education Act and the number of states that have gone to the Common Core state standards and the states that aren't, the kinds of things they're doing, and sort of some of the complexities around that. So that was educational, and also to hear what other people's ideas are and projects that they've got going on to help schools adapt to the new system.
This is Marcella. One of the biggest trends that I saw, which I think we've all had across the years, is how can we better collaborate with each other, identify areas that we're all working in, and not, you know, have parallel efforts, but work together to help each center stronger in whatever it is that we're seeing come up in our different regions. Also, technology was a big area of discussion, how to use it more effectively, efficiently, doing more virtual conferences, cost-cutting, and also keeping our role within Office for Civil Rights and Department of Justice a little bit more defined and more effective on our part.
Did you guys see a lot of other similar podcast-like activity from the other centers? I know the MEAC has theirs maybe still going. What was the other center's kind of take on technology?
This is Kathy again. Some are using the technology more than others. Podcasts and webinars are the two vehicles that seem to be being used the most. And this center has not done a webinar to date, but I think by the first of the year that will be remedied now that we have some a little more technical information than we had at the beginning. I think the other is that the use of Skype to do some of our conversations is probably going to be more frequent, either not only with our own clients, but with other equity assistance centers. As nice as it is to meet in person, it's a luxury that the budgets don't allow, except on the odd occasion. But Marilyn, you had been a while since you had been to an all-hands meeting.
That's true. This is Marilyn, and the last time I was in Washington was in March, Kathy, when you and I went together for the Leveraging Conference. But this one was totally different because it was only the EAC, and as you had said earlier, it was our first opportunity for perhaps the rest of the staff to get to meet almost all of the directors. I think maybe one or two were not there. But to meet all the directors and our counterparts, and then just to hear, I just say, a grand sense of pride in the long history of accomplishments of the Equity Assistance Centers. As the different speakers came from the various governmental agencies and offices, I noticed that the EAC directors had no hesitancy whatsoever in saying to each of those high-power speakers, but we are here and we can help you to do your job. One of the speakers said that she was stunned at the small size of the EAC group because we do so much. She thought she was coming to address about 500 people, and I thought that was quite a high compliment. So I think all of us had just the good feeling that we are part of a very, very important group. And, you know, we see each other here, but to actually just see where we fit into that larger cog, that larger picture.
That's
just great.
I was going to ask if it was a more heartening or kind of disheartening thing, but it sounds like it was a very heartening experience.
Oh, yeah, I would say heartening.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome.
I think, Tyler, it's Kathy again, that sometimes, and this has been a month, at least for this center, when there's been a lot of travel, a lot of work, and bluntly, we're tired.
Yeah.
And it's also nice to know we're not the only ones who are tired. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a lot of pride in the work that we do and how much we are able to accomplish on a shoestring.
Mm-hmm.
So, and to know that we aren't the only ones, you know, hanging on to this frayed shoestring. So it's renewing in that sense. And it's also a confirmation that what we have been doing is right to do. Right in terms of we're doing it in the correct manner, but it's also right in the ethical and the moral sense, too.
I'd like to throw this out to the listeners of our podcast. One of the speakers, presenters, was our own director, Kathy Rigsby, who talked to the entire group on Title IX and the work that it has done over many years and the future good things that are going to happen. She carried that ball very, very well. We were all quite proud to be associated with her.
Yeah, you did a great job. And that was one of the things that came up in this meeting for the 2 days that we were there, that everybody kind of broke out into different groups. It was race, gender, and
national origin.
Thank you. And Janelle and I, this is Amber, Janelle and I happened to end up in the gender group, which was the smallest of each of the three groups, and that was some very interesting conversations about why was it the smallest and, you know, how every piece actually integrate together. You can't have just a race issue. There would be something dealing with national origin or with gender as well that you'd have to take into account when you're trying to solve the problem.
Amber, I'm curious, like since you mentioned, you know, you're new to equity work, and what was something you heard from that discussion that, you know, when you're talking to someone that doesn't do this kind of stuff, what would be something that you explain that you took away from that conversation?
Well, for me, like I always want to give examples and kind of relate this back to what I call quote-unquote normal people that don't talk about equity every day, and to give the example of, just a simple example of girls not being asked to join into a science group, an after-school science group, or given the chance to apply to be into AP classes. I mean, little things like that I didn't even think about when I was in school, but just to kind of make people aware that those opportunities are there and you can always ask, you know, being given that access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another gender issue that we were talking about that was a theme throughout the conference was the issue of disproportionality, mm-hmm. which is an important concept of the overrepresentation of certain groups in retentions and discipline issues or getting thrown out of school, that kind of thing, and the kinds of group limitations that the impact that has on not just on individuals but on really large numbers of people. And you can see those patterns, and when you look at the data, you can see those patterns.
We're touching on disproportionality, that indicators 9 and 10 of over and under representation special ed also was a big mm-hmm. discussion topic as well, which we heard at the previous, when Perry was there.
Well, it's been that under representation has been a concern for really a very, very long time, but part of it, and it will continue to be a concern as long as we have students who are not represented throughout education in their numbers in the school population. But the other, we've tended to address things as a single issue as opposed to seeing all of the intersections and addressing those, frankly, as one. And that, I think, is going to take a change in attitude, but it's also going to end some turf wars in the sense that, well, I'm in special ed, therefore I don't have to consider other equity areas, when in fact all of them need to be looked at as a whole, because simply to look at the sum of the parts is not to look at the whole child.
It sounds like kind of a critical, holistic approach.
It is. I think it is. Yeah. And Janelle brought up, and I think Marcella and I have talked about this, and this is the Common Core that standards that are being used in more and more states. And the fact that as they are written, there are going to be a lot of students who are not going to be able to achieve them because of language issues, because of previous histories. And that's one of the things that was brought out, particularly among the directors, is to start looking at how we make those Common Core actually work for all students. Because when you start reading them, you go immediately that there are a lot of kids coming into kindergarten that are not going to be able to add and subtract as five-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the directors, one of the vocal gentlemen said the Common Core standards are for all children, but just not some.
Yes.
So that's incongruent. That's incongruent.
So that's something I think the Equity Centers and anybody in education is going to have to realize, that when you look at their Common Core standards, what has to be done to make sure that it is for all students, not just mm-hmm. some.
Yeah. For all students, but not for some.
And I think that's going to be... I don't want to say everything's a critical issue, but I think that's going to come more and more to the forefront as this push for testing and achievement becomes even stronger than it has, because you also want to look at children and not have schools turning out to be testing factories.
I was in the race group. As Amber explained already, there were the three different breakouts, and mine was the race. And I think we met maybe a total of three times over those 2 days. As Kathy said earlier, it was a very compact schedule with just every minute of moving. But each time that we met, they had to literally come and pull us out of the room almost physically, because we were so deep into the conversation. And apparently the same was true mm-hmm. with gender, probably with ELL and everything, because the issues are just so critical. They're so pertinent. And I think it was just good, as Kathy said, to know that others are struggling with some of the same things, but then also to know that we had a voice, that somebody was listening. Really, somebody was listening to what we were saying. Yeah. And this is Marilyn.
Marcella, what was your sense in the Common Core?
The Common Core
standards and concerns.
One of the biggest concerns that I heard there and I've heard elsewhere is that they're developed with economics in mind. The Governor's Association is part of it. The Chief State School Officers, those are the two driving forces behind it. So it's more to make sure the workers are up to par is the biggest criticism, to have them be able to do the basic read, write, a little bit higher math than usual. So that's why they're not for everybody, but they should be. Another, they're not ELL friendly. They're starting to develop their English language learners or acquisition standards. A lot of states have. Of the 54 states don't have the Common Core, they've opted out. So I think Texas might be one of them, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And they're, Texas is a political powerhouse in English language acquisition. So we'll see what comes up.
And of course, one of the other things that is the perennial problems, Kathy again, is the implementation of Common Core, as with Race to the Top, is going to demand more of our schools and our teachers with no more resources mm-hmm. than are already in the pipeline. So it's not just enough to say, we have to work smarter mm-hmm. or we have to work harder. Which we do, but I keep thinking there's got to be another dimension in there without putting it all on the little red schoolhouse. And I have no idea what it is, and I'm open to all ideas on this, but having more of a national standard does have its plus with the mobility in this society as people move from state to state. I found that out as not only as a parent, as a parent of a service brat, but as somebody who moved a lot in school anyway, and knowing that Iowa had certainly higher standards than some of the states that I've lived in. So that leveling of standards may be good, but how do we make sure that it doesn't leave kids in the lurch?
Kind of taking a look at current events, separate from politics in general, is Barack Obama being reelected going to be beneficial for the EAC? Do you see any change from that, or?
I don't think it's going to make a change in our work. That was set under the 1964 Civil Rights Act, but what it does mean is there is a continuity in philosophy. So in that sense, it'll make things easier every time you have. Well, Marcella's making the gesture. No, it's not going to mean any more money as much as we would like.
We're going to stay the same.
Yeah.
But you know, those of us who have been around the block more than once have seen when there's been a change of administration, there's been a change in what equity centers can or cannot do. And the work that we've been doing will continue.
So we won't have new hoops to jump through.
No, the walls aren't going to be painted a different color either. I mean, we will maintain. We'll maintain our playing field.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think, again, the various speakers seem to voice that without just proclaiming it from the housetops. But you definitely heard that trend, that thread going through all of them was a sense of. Relief and assurance, as it were, mm-hmm. to use Kathy's word, that the continuity would be there at least for four more years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah,
it was
a
good thing. I think it was a good thing.
I think so, too.
Well, it's a good thing for schools, and it certainly is a good thing for centers. The past history has been under some administration, equity assistance centers weren't allowed to do a thing.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
or they were giving directions and what they may or may not do.
What kind of equity was equitable?
So, yes. So, what we've been doing, we will continue to do. And I, one of the things I have to break for us is of the centers, we are one of the few addressing all three areas consistently and with essentially the same emphasis.
Yes.
So one is not taking precedent over the other.
Makes sense. Yeah. We're right in the middle of the country.
We're right in the middle of the country, and we are working.
The three areas being?
Race, gender, and national origin, and we are doing that in a very balanced fashion.
Awesome.
Cool. Tyler, I like what you just said. What kind of equity is actually equitable? And that's a discussion I think that a lot of our school districts are having and coming up with no answers, and that's where we fit in to that whole
totally.
Equation. And so if you don't mind, I'll just borrow that, unless it's already been out there for years.
Please. Cool. Well, on that note, we will wrap it up for this special Thanksgiving EAC family episode.
Okay. One thing, Tyler, I would hope our listeners would let us know if there are particular areas that in which they're interested, for which a podcast would be appropriate, because we would be very happy to make sure that these are more than family conversations.
Totally, yeah. We have not emphasized enough that this is a two-way conversation, so our contact info is, of course, included at the end of the show, and so you can reach us any number of ways. And, we would love to hear from you for both equity reasons and, podcast discussion questions, topics. If you have a guest that you want interviewed on the show or you yourself would like to come and discuss something, please let us know. We are very open and flexible.
Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah, thank you, guys, and until next week.
After the turkey.
Yeah. After the turkey. All right. If you would like to contact the Region 8 Equity Assistance Center, you may do so at our website, metrostate-eac.org, at 303-556-6065, or via email at eac at msudenver.edu. Listeners are also invited to join the conversation by following us on Twitter at @EACRegion8 or by liking the Equity Assistance Center Region 8 Facebook page. Special thanks to the band Northbound for the use of their song Forward in this podcast. Thank you.